Blog Talk Radio.
Hail to the chief. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios. And Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you, sir?
Don, I can't complain. You know, we have some, indications of winter this time last night, that wet snow and et cetera. But there were a lot of festivities across the metropolitan area. There were a lot of political campaigns, contests, and et cetera. And, of course, there were winners, which are more important. And, of course, there were losers. But we have been honored this evening to have one of the winners and, in fact, a part of history. You know, Don, I had the opportunity to be present and at his campaign headquarters on the occasion of the election many, many years ago, in fact, over three decades ago, of the beloved and respected Van White, who was elected as the first African-American to the Minneapolis City Council. And I've certainly been present to see history made with respect to the first Asian, if you will, with Bong Yang, who was good enough to join us just a number of months ago when there were others who were a little bit cautious and uncomfortable with talking with and being on the program with Don and Ron. But first of all, Councilman-elect, congratulations to you, your lovely wife, and your two children.
Thank you so much. You know, the results aren't official yet, so we really can't celebrate too much, but hopefully the results will be official and they'll be good for us.
Well, though this frank voting, sir, leaves a lot to be desired. I know what the format they say is supposed to be, and, you know, my math tells me that when you add it all up, you are the numerical prevailer, if you will, winning in all the categories. And so as far as I'm concerned, you are the councilman-elect of the 5th Ward of the city of Minneapolis. And so that leads me to a couple of questions. We, you know, it's kind of getting into government at work. First of all, you will be taking your seat, if certified, if you will. What will be the date that you will assume your seat?
My understanding is that it's at the start of the new year.
January 1st, 2nd, 3rd. Right about then?
Yes.
Okay. Now, of course, if certified, which I just don't see any reason why it shouldn't happen, you will be involved in a number of orientations as a new council member, and that'll be presided over by the incumbent council president, Barb Johnson, who actually is the council representative in the ward just adjacent to you, the fifth, if you will. And you will be going through orientation, familiarity, understanding the rules of engagement, if you will. And it will be at that point that you will certainly begin the discussion about your preferences, committee assignments, and et cetera. Can you share with us what is your thinking with respect to committee assignments?
You know, I think, I mean, our first priority up here is public safety, and so I'd love to be a part of that. You know, I think that anything to do with the budget or ways and means would be nice. My goodness, I mean, if I had my pick, you know, there would be a lot of committees that I'd serve on, but I certainly don't think it's possible to serve on every single one. So, you know, if I had to prioritize first and foremost, I mean, it would definitely be public safety.
Okay, let's say it's public safety and ways and means. Now, you will be a part.
I mean,
yes, okay. Now, you will be a part of seven freshmen, if you will. There are, you know, seven new folks coming onto the city council. And it comes at a time, and we talked about this the last time you were with us a number of months ago, there are a lot of economic issues that the city of Minneapolis is going to have to address. Do you see the need for attempting to renegotiate, though I think it's almost an impossibility? And by the way, this the councilman-elect is an attorney and served with distinction in the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. Before some funny politics ended his career there, if you will. But what is your thinking about the city meeting its obligation on the Viking Stadium? Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I mean, thank you for describing my situation with the Civil Rights Department. I think you described it very well. You know, with regard to the Viking Stadium, I mean, I'm really open to whatever suggestions that are out there. I mean, I certainly at this point don't know what the possibilities are, but if there is not an impossibility and there's, you know, a possibility to make some changes, I mean, I'd love to do that just because, I mean, the city's obligation is huge over a 30-year period, and I think that, you know, we were misled for the most part, and I'd like to see things maybe better for us as a city.
Okay. Let me take the liberty as a longtime political observer to suggest to you that one of the committees that is a kind of ad hoc committee in some regards, but it was put in place by the legislation that created the People's Stadium, you certainly may want to make sure that you have a chance to sit on the implementation committee, which is the committee that it looks at some of the issues, financing, funding, and et cetera, pertaining to the stadium and its relationship to the city of Minneapolis. I think they need a clear mind, if you will, and certainly an intellectual and intelligent mind to maybe help the citizens, be it of the Fifth Ward or the city of Minneapolis, because I think that there is still a lot of resentment, and I think maybe that was reflected during the contest yesterday amongst the voters and taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis. I think that you're absolutely correct. People think and feel strongly that they were not told the truth, you know, and
right,
that they may have been taken to the cleaners, and there needs to be greater clarity. Now, let me ask you a tough question. Don't want to put you on the spot, but it is a part of what happens in the dynamics of the city council and happens at different intervals. Have you decided what your thinking is and who you will be supporting for council president?
You know, it's been discussed. It's been thought about. I guess people have, I guess, pushed me to think about it harder. But, I mean, at this point, I'm really open to anything. I haven't really thought about it too hard because, you know, I mean, up until yesterday, we were all focused on just trying to win the election. And I will tell you today and in the next couple of days, we're going to be focused on just getting our lawn signs taken back. And so it's kind of almost, you know, one of the furthest things from my mind at this point.
Okay.
You know, but it's on my mind, though, I can tell you that.
And, of course, you know and understand, sir, that certainly it will come up and begin to present itself as the elephant in the room during the orientation.
Yes, I imagine that would be the case. Yes.
Yes. And I just think it is an appropriate question because, as you know, nothing I'm telling you, as I said before, Councilman-elect was in the Civil Rights Department, has a good understanding of the city charter and et cetera. This is a strong council, weak mayor form of government, which means that the council really has significant authority, power, if you will, appointed and otherwise, and certainly in maintaining the fiscal and fiduciary integrity of the city. And so I imagine there is a lot of discussion that will be directed towards you, but again, you have to always, of course, remember that you're a freshman, and so it'll be interesting to see how the council organizes itself. Now, for the purposes of our national and international audience, this is basically, for all practical purposes, a Democratic council, DFL, one
yes.
Green Party, Cam Gordon,
right.
Who caucuses, if there's such a thing, where you have no other parties, caucuses, of course, with the Democrats. which, by the way, gives Cam a seat on the exec committee, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when one talks in terms of the organization, I just hope that for the benefit of the constituents of the Fifth Ward, that you are looked at seriously as a person who brings valuable assets and attributes to the arena, and that you're looked at to be on some important committees and important
yes.
leadership roles. Okay? Mr. Allen, yes, let me yes. turn it back to you. And again, Councilman-elect, congratulations and the very best. And the prayers, irrespective of what religion one is, the prayers go out to you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. And, you know, if I may just ask a question, I mean, so since you suggested the issue of the council president, what are your thoughts on that? I'd love to hear.
Well, we all know that Councilmember Barb Johnson, who is a person I've known for many years, am a friend with her, knew her mother, Alice Rainville, who was council president for many years. But I know that there is a move afoot to talk in terms of change. You're in the best position, though, to determine if that change is meaningful. Sometimes change for the purpose of change is not good. And so I think, though, that there needs to be some kind of understanding on how things work, and there needs to be absolute fairness with respect to the seven new council members that are coming in. And I think that the reflections made by the constituency that put the seven of you into positions on the Minneapolis City Council must be respected. And so
yes.
we don't need the traditional shenanigans, if you will, of quote-unquote party control. Because one thing that I noted about you is that you did not display or present yourself as a party person, quote-unquote. You represented yourself as a man of the people, okay?
Right.
And so sometimes there are outside forces, be it organized labor, big corporate, or et cetera, who maintain that they will, some way or another, dictate who it is can best serve the interests, quote-unquote, of the city. I think you agree, sir. Your responsibility and obligation is to serve the best interests of your constituents.
Absolutely.
And so to your question, and I appreciate it, this is kind of
yeah.
like bouncing the ball back and forth. I appreciate you asking me that question, because those questions should not be asked unless there is some thinking and reflections. And I've been an observer, if you will, for 50 years, and so I know the politics. Let me give you just this long before you were born. A lot of people are not aware that at one time the city council in this city consisted of 26 members.
Right.
Until a charter change in 1950, and they cut down to 13. But the politics never changed, and I can tell you that. The politics of manipulation and dominance and other kinds of political considerations always seem to stay the same with a kind of a doctrine of bossism, okay? And I just don't think that's going to work, and I think that's what got the city in trouble on the whole question of a referendum on the stadium. And so this could very well be a new era, and when you talk about a new era, you talk in terms of what kind of ability old leadership has to adjust to new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Allen.
Yes, Mr. Rock, we won't keep you that much longer, but I just have a couple of questions. As Mr. Edwards eloquently put it, you were a former employee of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. You kind of know that department inside and out. Do you plan on, you know, some people say revenge is, I guess, best served cold, and I know you're not that type of guy. Let me make that clear. I know that. But would you consider, you know, being the person that the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights reports to as far as on the city council?
Well, my understanding is that the Department of Civil Rights reports to public safety as the committee that oversees it.
Yes.
I mean, would I want to be chair of that? Sure, why not? I mean, that'd be great. But,
yeah.
you know, I want to just respect the process and see how the process goes. So, you know, I mean, one of my campaign issues has been really that we have to value our civil rights department, because it's an important department. It's an integral part of our city, and you know, its history has meant so much, and its work has meant so much to the city, and so we need to fully fund it and make it an integral part of the city and just not kind of the stepchild of the city department. And so, I mean, that's really important for me.
Great.
Let me just cut in if I could, Mr. Allen, because
there's an
interesting piece here with respect to the question that actually you and I and a couple others were dying to ask the councilman-elect. On September 25th of this year, the Minneapolis City Council Executive Committee under the chairmanship of outgoing Mayor R.T. Rybak did something which they maintain is kind of a tradition, though it's not really, sent a letter of intent not to reappoint to Valma Corvell, the executive director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, indicating to her that she will not be reappointed after her term expires officially in January. Now, of course, when that question was raised to city officials about what did that really mean and would Ms. Corvell continue to be functional, if you will, based on the fact that she had been told by the executive committee that she would not be reappointed, how does that play out? Now, what the letter says, went on to say, was that, of course, they wanted to leave it to the new chief executive, in other words, new mayor. It appears, and Mr. Bong Yang laid it out to us, and that is that there is a quote-unquote certification process, but it appears that Betsy Hodges is the mayor-elect. Would we agree, gentlemen?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes. And it has been said that during the course of election conversations and et cetera, that council member Betsy Hodges had indicated that she would contemplate some changes. Now, I don't want, Bong Yang, I do not want you, sir, to even comment on this, but she was indicating that her new choice to head the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department would be one Michael Brown. Which I think there was a lot of resistance to that consideration, particularly in light of his deteriorating relationship with the Minneapolis Police Department and the whole issue of the Minneapolis Police Oversight Board. So I just think it's important for folks to know that technically the council indicated to Velma Corvell on the 25th of September that she would not be reappointed. They said that that's just kind of a functionary kind of thing. That's really not true because, you know, the chief of police and the fire chief didn't get the same kind of letter. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, well, that's basically what I had. I just want to say that I watched, on the March 18th, Mr. Blog Yang came on our show for the first time during, the campaign, and he was willing to come on and talk where the other candidates were apprehensive, as you first said in the beginning, and we really appreciate you, Mr. Yang, Councilman Yang, coming on the air and talking with us, and we just like you to know that, this show is open for you if you need a platform or a bully pulpit to discuss anything with the community and take callers. And so if that's all you have, Mr. Edwards, I'd like to say thank you to Mr. Blog Yang, City Councilman Ward 5 elect, probably going to take over January 2nd from the information that I'm looking at in the studio here.
Uh-huh.
And I look forward to that day, and that will be a celebration across the Twin Cities in our community and especially in your community. So, again, thank you for the time.
If we could, just 1 second for our listeners, because this councilman-elect has indicated that he is very much open to the public, and on his campaign literature, there was a number, 612-460-0133, to call, to talk. Is that number still available, sir, or will there be we know that you'll have the 2205 number, but is there an additional number that people may call to reach out to you?
Yeah, the campaign number there will probably be available for the next 2 weeks. We're going to take that down. And, I can give you my personal cell phone, and I have no problems with that. My number is 612-968-2504. That's 612-968-2504. And, I might be busy, so anybody who leaves a message, I will call them back. But if it's just on caller ID as a number that just called, I will not call them back.
All right. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time. Mr. Allen, finish it up.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Councilman Elect Yang, and we look forward here for updates, maybe after your first 100 days in office, and we'll get in touch with you then. We'll go ahead and let you do the work that needs to be done in Minneapolis, and we're looking forward to keeping a close eye on the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. You guys have a good night.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank
you.
In fact, Mr. Allen, I just think it's appropriate that we text Councilman-elect Bong Yang, and indicate to him that we'd like to invite him back after his first 100 days, and so that'll basically be 3 months and a week and a quarter, if you will, and by that time, by the way, and so that and I know he's and his supporters are still listening. That will come at a time when we will be getting a better feel if, in fact, the 32% goal of minority participation on the Viking Stadium has been reached, if you will, or is in the process of being reached, because within the first 100 days of the new council's terms or tenure, if you will, construction will have begun on the People's Stadium, according to all of the charts and graphics, and particularly based on information provided to the governor of the state of Minnesota, the Honorable Mark Dayton. And so I think it will be an excellent time for us to have that discussion. And by the way, by that time, everything should be settled on the Civil Rights Department. But there are other departments, of course, that people are talking about some symbol of reform. And, of course, we stayed away from going into any kind of specifics about the police department, but there are some things that have to happen. I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed that we have heard nothing about the incidents in Apple Valley and Green Bay pertaining to the police department. We know that the Terrence Franklin situation has now gone to a civil suit. The criminal or any possibility of criminal charges against the police by state authorities disappeared when a grand jury said it was just okay to do him like they did him. So there is a civil case with that. By the way, so that, as we said before, it's not something that was made up here with regards to the letter received by Valmont Corleville, in which the council indicated that she would not be reappointed, okay? And that her term effectively ends on our, at the end of January. And so anyone has any questions? And by the way, let's open the phone lines up now, Mr. Allen, in case anyone has any phone any calls or questions or et cetera. The phone lines are open.
Yeah, the phone lines are not open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, give us
yes,
a call.
Sir.
And stand by here, Mr. Edwards. I have someone that looks like they've been on hold for 22 minutes and 45
all
seconds.
All right, then. Let's get them on
Donald. Let me see if they're just in the queue or if they're just listening. Hello, you're live on the air, caller. Would you like to make a comment? Okay, they are in the queue listening. We'll just put them back there.
Mr. Allen, let me just do this because we don't want anyone to say that we were attempting to put out false information or et cetera, or that we were attempting to disrespect the office of the new councilman-elect. As I stated, and I now read it again over the air, said it dated September 25th, 2013, from the office of the mayor, R.T. Ryback. The reference is notice of intent not to reappoint. Dear Velma Corvell, the exec committee, at its September 25th, 2013 meeting, passed a motion in accordance with Minneapolis Ordinance Section 20.456 that it does not intend to reappoint department heads for terms ending in January of 2014. Since your term ends in January 2014, and to comply with Minneapolis Ordinance 20.456, I am notifying you of the action taken by the Executive Committee. I believe we have a strong team of department heads at the city of Minneapolis, and I will make a strong case to the next mayor that the team should be reappointed. However, in order not
to tie the hands of the next mayor to treat equally each department head whose term ends in January 2014 and potentially to save taxpayers' money. Boy, that is important, isn't it? Thank God for the stadium, right. The exec committee has taken this action. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor R.T. Ryback, chair of the exec committee. So we just wanted to get that out because there's been every attempt to kind of keep that a secret because there was quite a technicality and there was some question a year ago when Velma Corvell was only reappointed for what appears now to be a year.
Yeah.
That was really cute.
We have a caller.
Let's get the call. Okay, what do we got?
Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, Bilbo Jenkins.
What's up, Bilbo?
Oh, Bilbo, okay. All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what, you're the grandson of Bilbo of Mississippi or what? But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, so what's the demographic of North Minneapolis?
What's the demographics? Demographics
yeah.
of North Minneapolis is from basically Highway 394 to the city boundary in to the north, the lines of Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center.
Okay, particularly
to the west.
Ward.
Well, you've asked the question. To the west, the communities of Golden Valley, Robbinsdale, and et cetera, and then, of course, to the east, the Mississippi River, which is a natural boundary. So that's North Minneapolis, sir. Okay?
Okay, so particularly Fifth Ward, predominantly African Americans, correct?
Fifth
yeah,
Ward.
And
go ahead, Mr. Alvin. Do you
okay.
have some?
Well, look, yeah, it. In the Fifth Ward, what you're looking at, and I'm looking at numbers from the people in the Fifth Ward that use North Point Clinic, 91% of them are 275% below the federal poverty line. You have African-Americans, it looks like 60%, Somalis, white, well, the next highest group would be white, and then Somali, Asian, which includes Hmong and Chinese and others, are in that neighborhood. The demographic that I'm looking at right here is from 2010, and I know since the 2011 tornado has really disrupted, you've had an influx of Caucasian homeowners coming into North Minneapolis, and you have a large exodus of African Americans. So it is a diverse community, but it's a poor community, and I don't mean to contradict myself, but that's what it looks like.
Okay.
And also, let me just give a more current update. Actually, you have the census. The last census that has allegedly the most significant empirical data. And in asking that question, sir, what is your thinking in regards to asking the question?
Well, if Fifth Ward is predominantly black, how was Long Yang able to win, sir? I mean,
well,
when Nellie Johnson
predominantly
Lee carried
black.
It,
it's
predominantly
not
there are votes for
black
in that district.
Well, it's quite clear. One of the things that I've clearly saw and watched this very closely, and I've been a long-time observer of politics in the Fifth Ward since 1945, okay, I mean, if you want to go in that way. His campaign was well-organized, also was well-integrated.
cool.
His people were door-knocking, continuously, starting way back in June, late June, and all through July, August, September, October. He put together a well-coordinated and precise campaign, and
well,
it's clear
do you think that,
the numbers. He appealed to a lot of voters of other persuasions other than just Asian.
Well, yeah, I was thinking that maybe the powers to be, the leaders of North Minneapolis, maybe have secretly met with him in Monte Carlo back room, maybe, and pushed him and others to vote.
Well,
I mean, could that be?
I don't think so with this candidate. I don't think did that because I think they wrote him off right from the get-go. You know, they thought their man, they had two, actually. They had Ian Alexander and Brett Buckner. They figured they could get one of the two in. They, I think, underestimated. And we said this in March, sir, because we had him on our program. He was one of the few candidates that agreed to appear on the Ronnie Donnie show. And it was quite clear then that he was being ignored. And I think that the ecumenical and political leadership made a decision that he wasn't worth talking to. And, wow, that really kind of blew up in everybody's face.
Well,
so I don't
know,
think that any of those secret meetings took place.
Well, a statement was made by a high-ranking black preacher on the north side that the Asians and Somali are well-organized and, you know, the blacks need to be quiet because they didn't go out and vote for their man. You know, I guess Mr. Buckner was supposed to carry this thing here, and people never showed up in droves like expected.
Well, was it Mr. Buckner, or was it both he and Alexander? Because actually, Alexander, according to the data we're looking at here in studio, Alexander didn't outpoll Mr. Yang, but he outpolled Brett Buckner by first choice. And so it looked like Alexander was more the man, but Alexander really didn't come close to Mr. Yang. And so whoever the darling was of the leadership, if you will, I don't know. In fact, I'm waiting to hear from them because one of the things that has happened, regrettably for us, is that for the first time in 30 years, Mr. Allen, be advised of this, is the first time in 30 years, in 33 years in Minneapolis and 20-some years in St. Paul, there will be no African-American on the city council of either city.
Yep. Well, exactly. besides Van White back in the day, even though there were African-Americans on the city council, were they really black people?
Well, there were only two. There's never been any more than two African-Americans at a time, sir, on the city council. Van White,
black?
Elected after him, was Sharon Sells Belton, who later became the first and only black mayor, also the first female. Though I noticed some folks were slipping up today saying that Betsy Hodges was the first female. I guess apparently Sharon Sells Belton is considered a female. But, I mean, really, I shouldn't say that. But
well,
to your question...
Go ahead, sir.
Well, to your question, in the history of the city, the first two African-Americans a couple years apart were Van White, Sharon Sells Belton, Brian Herron, Natalie Johnson Lee, Ralph Remington, and Don Samuels.
Well, it seems to me that when people say, well, we need a black person in office, they think work would be done. I mean, how come North Minneapolis is in the same condition, maybe worse than 40 years ago? And it's been black city council members. There was a black mayor. You know, you got your clergy. You got your leaders. I mean, what's going on in that fifth ward? I mean, what's Betsy Hodges going to do with crime, you know, when she becomes mayor corruption?
Can I interject something here, Mr. Edwards, real quick?
Go right ahead,
Mr.
Edwards.
On the phone?
This is the Donnie Ronnie program.
Yeah. Well, here's what we have going on. Now, if you remember at the African-American caucus, Bill English and Sherry Pugh, they basically presented Jackie Cherry Holmes as that's the person they're supporting. Actually,
yep.
Bill English went as far as to say that before the caucus even could decide that Jackie Cherry Holmes was the person, okay? And then sometime between the end of the day, the morning and the end of the day, they threw Betsy Hodges in there because it could have went either way at that particular time. But then you have Brett Buckner. Brett Buckner's campaign was siloed. And here goes the problem with this group of people. You have an old guard that is still lingering out there, that has not seen any progress, that has not perpetrated any progress for anybody but themselves. And so what I think happened here is you had someone like Blog Yang, Councilman-elect, who mobilized blacks, whites, yellow, red, black, I mean everybody, door knocked every weekend, during the week, lit job drops, and the guy will talk to anybody. Whereas you have a guy like Brett Buckner, who will say something sideways to you, and, you know, you're thinking about what you're going to do to him, and then he won't answer the questions, and he's, you know, kind of evasive. He won't come on the air with the Ron and Don show, but they'll all be picked up in, like, the Insight News. And I've told these guys, Insight News is the kiss of death, because you had Jackie Cherry home, you had all these folks on there that lost.
Let me say this, because with regards to the caller, I mean, we have to give the caller his deference, if you will, because one of the things that other communities are saying about us in the black community, and white folks clearly say it as they manipulate us, is that we have gone through a lot of money that allegedly was allocated, granted, awarded, and et cetera, to help the African-American community. And much of that money cannot be accounted for. And, in fact, on my television program to air this coming Sunday, I remind people of the article written by the former president of the NAACP, Booker Hodges, who is also a deputy sheriff in Dakota County. Mr. Hodges wrote an article in which he identified, cataloged, compartmentalized, over $10 million that had been received by the ecumenical community and others to allegedly, over a 10-year period, deal with the color problem, if you will, particularly the black problem. And, you know, we all know, and I'm not sure where the caller is calling from or who he is, but we all know that we are basically discouraged. And in fact, some people even try to threaten some people. I don't take threats at all. That this cannot and should not be discussed. It's indoors. It's kind of like the situation with the Vikings. You know, it should stay in the locker room, or in this case, it should stay at J.D. Hoyt's or Monte Carlo's, you know, or Sevens or somewhere like that. And it's something that we're going to have to address as a African-American community if we're going to be anything relevant, because I got to tell you, right now, downtown, the conversation, downtown council and other places, with the exception of the federal elected official, Keith Ellison, and two state senators, and in St. Paul, God bless her, one state representative, what white experts on quote-unquote political movement are saying is the African-American community is at the bottom of the barrel, gentlemen, at the bottom of the barrel.
Well, you know, I agree. It's just just kind of funny, you know, the Viking Stadium, even that issue there with the contracts that was levied out. How can an entity get almost $1 million? I think an organization in North Minneapolis got almost $1 million, but they're not going to be building the stadium. They're not going to be moving any concrete. I guess they're just, we're giving the money just for future training. Is that under, am I correct?
Well, they were given the money to keep quiet. That's why I made the statement, sir. I don't know if you heard it, but maybe you were in the process of dialing. One of the things that we have indicated to Councilman-elect Bong Yang is that we would like to have him back in 100 days. And the reason that 100 days becomes important, 100 days will take us right into April of 2014 when actual construction is to begin. And that means the workforce is in place, your numbers are known. One of the things that I have become aware of, and I have contacts in different quarters, if you will. In fact, I was the person that encouraged a group of black journeymen and et cetera from Kansas City to stand by and prepare to, make application for the jobs, is because the number that we're now hearing, and it is outrageous, sir, and that is that there are no more. There's no more of a possibility of 68 individuals being hired, and maybe half of them may be African Americans. Out of 7,000 people that will work on the stadium, I'm talking about working on the actual construction, and a workforce starting on January 20th, there about 1,500 workers a day will be on that site. Of course, the numbers will be rotating as different areas of construction begins, but I am made to understand by very reliable sources within state government and even the construction industry that there will be no more than 68 people of color and probably no more than 30 or 40 African Americans that will even be considered to work on the Viking Stadium. And so, you know, in some ways, sir, you've answered your own question.
Well, yeah, I kind of follow you a little bit, and you seem to have influence. Why don't you, maybe your associate, make a call to some of the black leaders and clergy, and maybe you guys can get together with some community people and residents and block the highway from people going downtown early in the morning so you guys can make a stance about the hiring practices.
Well, one of the things that I will not do is that I will not play that game and pretend to block the highway and then meet downtown and receive money under the table. Yeah, I don't intend to play that game. My position is one, I cannot speak for my colleague who is much more conservative than myself, but my position is that there are things that are etched in stone called law, which allegedly provides justice and opportunity. The commissioner of the Department of Human Rights, Mr. Kevin Lindsay, initially said over a year ago, that he would guarantee that 32% of the workforce would be persons of color, both M and WMBEs, minority and women. I disputed that and said that that was an impossibility, that there was no way in the world that could happen because that workforce wasn't available. While we were talking about that this time last year, well, even 16 months ago, some of the leaders, sir, I think that you're making reference to, were already meeting and determining how to cook the books, shade the numbers, and et cetera. Okay?
Well, you have to be at the meeting when these discussions are held, sir.
Beg your pardon?
You all need to be at the meetings when these discussions are held. I mean, they're public.
I'm not, nor is my colleague. I'm pretty sure we're not a part of that group. We would never be invited. In fact, my associate so upset some of the leadership that one of them took him off their Facebook. Yeah, it's kind of the talk of the town is that one of our leaders became so upset with my colleague Mr. Allen that he defriended him. I guess that's what you call it in the cyber industry. Let me just say this, sir. In 2012, early on, right at the very first meeting of the Sports Facility Authority, I attended those meetings. And under public comment, so it's in the record what I'm saying. It can be attested to. I talked in terms of the importance of making sure that there was equal opportunity, equity, blah, 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 blah. And then by September of 2012, I saw what was happening, and I went in a different direction in, let's say, direct discussions with some of the owners and et cetera, as well as raising questions about the jurisdictional authority of both the State Human Rights Department and the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. I was not surprised when I was told and presented with information and evidence that showed that the payments had been made to the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department to make sure that there is no honest review or monitoring of the Viking Stadium. And I would encourage you to ask the question of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department on where is currently the negotiations for them to allegedly monitor the stadium. But I'll just close it by saying this, that the information that is in play, and by the way, there have been, I think, three or four or five meetings to talk about that $700,000 that you were raising a question about, and they can't even account for that money now. That $700,000 that they received to allegedly train, that can't be accounted for now. You still with us? Hello?
It looks like he has hung up.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, we don't want to exhaust it, but, you know, these are good questions, and we're prepared to answer. Let's give that number out again, Don.
Sure, the number
wants to call.
Yeah, phone lines are wide open, 347-426-3904. Again, the number 347-426-3904. And go ahead and give us a call. And we're talking about the election last night and, you know, some of the winners. And so, well, we'll just call them fortunates and unfortunates, and really unfortunates. Well, what the hell? Let's call them losers. And we have another caller.
All right, let's get the callers. We want the callers to very important.
Mm-hmm. Caller, you are live on the air.
Well, I'm just in the queue right now.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Fine.
Nope.
Just in the queue. Okay.
In the queue.
By the way, caller raised a question about Brett Buckner. I was a little puzzled because Brett Buckner finished third. Ian Alexander finished a distant second behind Councilman-elect Bong Yang.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what people are talking about. But let me do this, Don. As a old timer, if you will, it's been around here a long time. I just think it's also distressful that for the first time in 27 years, if I'm not mistaken, the first ward of St. Paul, which is, you know, the gentleman used the term predominantly black. First ward St. Paul, predominantly black, that's the Rondo-Dale neighborhood, lost its African-American seat last night.
Yes.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm here with Ellis.
Yeah. It's really kind of devastating because this goes back to the days of the legendary and late Katie McWatt, who fought so hard, and that was at a time when the council elections used to be citywide. And then through the efforts of many of us civil rights activists 40 years ago, we forced a charter change over in St. Paul and got them to go to the ward system, as they are doing over here in Minneapolis, and figuring that we would finally get an African-American elected. And lo and behold, 2 years after the charter change, a man by the name of William Wilson was elected to a two-year term, and then right after that, the change in the charter had indicated that 2 years hence that the terms would be 4 years. William Wilson served in that position. A gentleman by the name of Blakely served in that position. There was a Latino that served briefly in that position. And then you had Debbie Montgomery, Melvin Carter. So after basically 20, and you know, I know you have relatives that reside in St. Paul that were very much a part of the ecumenical community of St. Paul. I just hope that, you know, we have some feedback from them on what they're feeling tonight. Because, like I said, for the first time in about 27 years, there's no black representation. And for the first time here in Minneapolis in 33 years, there is no African-American representation on the Minneapolis City Council.
Yep,
I mean, I'm not understanding. See, I'm kind of confused. I just can't quite understand where the collapse took place. It's kind of like the question I posed to you on these programs. You know, what happened during the negotiations when, you know, we were going to get $2.5 million in training money and hundreds of millions of dollars to run the concessions at the Viking Stadium? No one has responded to us. I mean, you've basically been knocked off the website, but no one will tell us what the heck happened. And we've asked this question of State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who's the co-chair of the Legislative Oversight Commission, and man, nobody will say a word.
Yeah, they will not. They will not give us any information whatsoever. I mean, we're just asking common questions. You know, I mean, what happened from $2.5 million to $700,000? But what that whole thing, Mr. Edwards, what bothers me and angers me the most is that we have African American contractors out there that are trying to do the right thing, but they don't have the capacity to go buy those little orange and white cones to sit in the highway and go through that training at MnDOT to learn how to do that. And so if they had that, they would be prosperous. They could hire people from the community. So it really gets you pissed off when you find out that the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority has given Lewis King and Summit Academy $700,000 for training. Okay, well, what happened to the people that are already trained? You know, number one. And number two, wouldn't that $700,000 be good in a business incubator with some experienced contractors that are in the union that could pluck the finest and the best from the community who are unemployed and underemployed and put them to work in general? Because 2 years on a stadium project is not a career. And I keep saying this. I say this almost every show. You know, you can't raise a family, buy a car, buy a house, go to school, or nothing for 2 years at $15 an hour. Okay, if that.
And we had a former trainee who certainly came on this program and put himself on the line and did indicate when asked by us if he were prepared to sign a notarized affidavit to the what went on, cheating on tests, and et cetera. I don't know, but I'll say this. I'll say this again. And, again, those phone lines are open. As an outgrowth of these kinds of decisions and this kind of conduct and et cetera, you saw the results last night.
Yes.
With a community being just absolutely politically gutted when you talk in terms of what it was that we – Well, you know, what the community should have gotten for its dollar. You know, I mean, again, I pay deference to former NAACP President Booker T. Hodges for his award-winning piece in 2010 in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, where he did great research, went back and took a look at all that money that the church organizations, the so-called church alliances, and now the new political alliance, and et cetera. You know, I just don't know. I'll tell you something that someone said to me today, and it's, you know, this is what free speech is about, what radio and talk radio is about. They said the Northwest Area Foundation is going to have to be very, very careful about its administrative conduct as it pertains to the kinds of things that the city of Minneapolis will be doing, the kind of grants and awards and et cetera will be signing off on. And particularly in light of the fact that the number two person at the Northwest Area Foundation, of course, is the husband of the incoming mayor-elect, Betsy Hodges. And I think that that's appropriate because I just think, Don, there has to be a greater examination of these relationships which serve no other purpose than to, you know, puff up, if you will, pad up, if you will, individuals as it pertains to their own personal wealth and et cetera. And it doesn't do anything for the masses of people. Man, you got so many people out here now that are being forced to triple up, double up in apartments. A lot of black folk losing their Section 8s and et cetera, being now forced back out of the suburbs, if you will. That whole game played after the 2011 tornado, now beginning to have repercussions in some of our suburbs, particularly to the south and the west. And I don't know. You know, I'm hearing there's some forums getting ready to take place on violence and mental health. I mean, man, you know, this mental health debate is a very dangerous one for African Americans, and we really haven't talked about that like we probably should, Mr. Allen, because I'm just reminded of the position of Mayor R.T. Ryback, who, by the way, was in a meeting this afternoon with Negro leaders, indicating to them the game plan for the education of the African-American child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's already in place, so he's drawing two checks.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's drawing two checks. And I'm just trying to understand what his forte is, what his area of excellence and expertise is in putting together, crafting. I know that he is already signing off because of the interlocking board relationships between the organization that he is now heading while still mayor of Minneapolis and the organization headed by the Samuels Empire, if you will, outgoing council member and unsuccessful mayoral challenger, Don Samuels. I'm hearing about these meetings and, you know, people are asking questions about, well, at what point will the community, particularly the parents, be made aware of what is being planned for the African-American child? I know this. I know the University of Minnesota is in some serious discussions with the pharmaceutical industry about new drugs, if you will, for the purposes of medicating little young people, if you will, and older people, if you will. And so that's going to be a big racket. Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. That's going to be a big industry. And we're not anywhere close, man, as a community to having voices out there to raise these questions, Mr. Allen. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe the older generation has let it slip by and they're young, fast, smooth, slick, you know, are talking, developing, crafting the plan and the strategy. But just this afternoon, the mayor of the city, you know, who hasn't even left office yet, is meeting with Negro leaders and giving them, quote-unquote, their marching orders on how this whole situation will be handled with the, quote-unquote, miseducation of the African-American child. Man, I just don't understand. Is there some moral issue that maybe we should also be concerned with? Because, you know, in some regards, this is how the whole thing of the Tuskegee experiment was beaten down. Not quite as sophisticated, But when it became revealed in Alabama, northern Alabama, that this kind of experimental medicine and things was going on, you know, the group of Negro leaders were brought in, you know, put their suits and ties on and indicated that everything was okay. You know, same thing happened here in 1971 when the University of Minnesota botched a very sensitive research on sickle cell, very prominent amongst African Americans here. And then right after that, the revelation that black children at Harrison and Bethune grade schools in Grant in North Minneapolis were being medicated without their parents knowing it. And so there's a history here, Mr. Allen. You know, I know we're not supposed to talk about it. I know that we're not supposed to, you know, to get on that particular wagon of truth and information. I guess that's why we don't have a Black History Museum.
Oh,
but anyway,
no,
that phone number, just in case anyone has any questions.
Sure, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, this, what you've been talking about has been great. And I titled, you know, the show tonight that, and I can elaborate on that because I have a couple of texts coming in and people are asking me to explain myself or we explain ourselves.
Explain ourselves in what context?
In the context of the title of the show, it says, Black supporters of Cherry Holman Buckner made their voice obsolete.
Oh, yeah.
And so
well,
it's just like...
Well, call us and ask us about it.
This is what I'm telling Yeah, that's what I'm telling us. Call us. We'll talk to you. And it's really important that you need to know that these meetings go on with this certain group of African-American individuals that have not, again, formed any progress or dictated or written any progress into the history books of African Americans in Minnesota, especially North Minneapolis. And you have a group that continues to siphon off the top and really not do the right thing. So, Mr. Edwards, if we look at 30 years in North Minneapolis, we'll just deal with that geographic area. You know, you look at 30 years in North Minneapolis and these nonprofits that are getting granted. You know, like there was just a recent article about Northside Achievement Zone, NAV, you know, signing 500 peak families up. You know, and it's hard to believe because I had a back and forth with Star Tribune veteran reporter Steve Brandt because I challenged him via email and I said, hey, you know, who wrote that title? Because what information do you have that says they signed up 500 people? Did you see the 500 families? Did you see the 500 families? Did you count them all? Did you interview? And it turns out, Mr. Edwards, as you know, as I knew already, that you know, well, we got a report from them. You know, you can make numbers. You know, people lie, men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie, but these numbers are no good. And there's no way that NAS can, you know, prove that until they bring those 500 families in a room, if that's even possible. And so you have little things like that going on that, you know, our African-American constituency will not address because they're all buddies. They're all part of the same social cabal. You know, we're part of the African-American Leadership Forum. They're part of the African-American Leadership Council. They're part of the African-American Wheelbarrow Rollers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. So, the African-American Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, yeah. And the Black Chamber of Commerce. Oh, I'm glad you brought them up, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, since they got that grant from Minneapolis Foundation for $300,000, I think they just went, you know, undercover because no, Ms. Leah Haggard, the executive director, does not call back. I know they're supposed to have a party in downtown St. Paul at a nightclub sometime this month in November, and I have not been able to track that down, but I'm sure I'll see something coming across here, and then I'll probably bring it up again when I see it. But it's interesting to see that, you know, you have this money going different places, and they could have been an instrumental part of guiding that $700,000 from a sports stadium actually to some contractors. But then again,
let me just say on that, Mr. Allen, it's interesting that you raise that question because in some of the preliminary discussions in January, February of 2012, it was the thinking of a number of individuals who were getting ready to become a part of what was going to become the Sports Facility Authority. And the governor's office that would be a vital role for the African-American or Black Chamber of Commerce, whatever their name is, working closely with the the well, I get them kind of confused here, the minority contractors, which actually were incorporated as the Black Contractors of Minnesota. But anyways, there had been a lot of discussion until things really geared up and got started by June of 2012 that this was what was supposed to happen, and that a lot of potential contractors of color, African Americans and others, were going to be kind of funneled, siloed, if you will, into being ready and prepared. So you said something earlier that I have to disagree with, Mr. Allen, and that is the preparation and et cetera. The fact of the matter is, as Michelle Kelm Haglin said to some of our Black leaders about 5 months ago when she indicated that their allotment allocation was going to be cut from 2.5 to 700, was that you've been training people for 10 years. And so we assume that you've got a reservoir of workers out there, journeymen particularly, and et cetera, that you should be able to just call upon. And what had happened back in 2012, I don't want to put State Senator Hayden on the spot, Jeff Hayden, but one of the things that some of the white Republican legislators laughed about when some of our leaders showed up over there during the 2012 session talking about and demanding and saying what they could do and dancing and, you know, bow jingling and et cetera, was that the white legislators, you know, who have a close relationship, of course, with the big white construction companies like M.A. Mortensen, Knutson, Kraus Anderson, et cetera, delivered documents, which ultimately were shown to State Senator Hayden, showing the falsification and the real category breakdown. Now, what began to happen at that same time and prior to that, yours truly had been reporting and utilizing the equity evaluation of 2010 and now the one of 2012, which clearly showed that we've talked about it numerous times on this program. We can't get anybody other than to send you a email saying you got a mental problem. You know what I mean, which I don't understand all that. We can't get people to even talk about, and what you just said minutes ago, that that I doubt very much if Ms. Samuels can produce the 500 Black families that they said that they have facilitated for under the provisions of their grant from the United States government. And people, you know, just do not want to deal with that. And then, and I'm going to have to, I want to move to this because you said something interesting that caught my attention. I had to chuckle when you talked about a party downtown St. Paul. I guess that's where they have to go because there won't be no Black action downtown Minneapolis anymore, okay?
No. Uh-uh.
Not after what happened at the downtown nightclub formerly owned by Prince. That shooting had led to the assassination of a 27-year-old African-American by the name of Tyrone Washington, who was actually set up, stalked, and gunned down inside of Epic. Yeah. And what's basically being said now is that we're just sick and tired of these Negroes being down here, okay? We're closing down basically all their joints, their clubs, and et cetera. You know, if there's some professional football players, basketball players, you know, that come down and spend some of that big money, that's okay, but we do not want them downtown. And I tell you right now, the city is real tense, though nothing will probably happen in any significant numbers until after the funeral of Mr. Washington. But the city is real tense as it pertains to retaliation. And I got to tell you, what happened downtown Minneapolis this past Saturday was frightening for many. Over 2,500 people forced to flee into the streets after gunfire erupted in the club, and, of course, Mr. Washington was gunned down. And there is no suspect, and, you know, probably won't be any suspect apprehended. And that's another piece and another challenge, by the way, that will be directed towards this new incoming council and the new incoming mayor. But, again, Black folk better understand that we have no political clout whatsoever, man, in this town.
No, none.
None whatsoever. Irrespective of the so-called Black federal congressman who, I don't know, last time he's ever spoke up on anything pertaining to hardship of the African-American community.
No, he has to be out of town in D.C. so he can get arrested and be on national news. He's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, on immigration, right. And so, but again, the phone number, I mean, the call lines are open. You know, you've been getting these texts, people, text messages, people talking in terms of where are we coming from, what is our role, or I don't, you know, whatever that's supposed to mean. Hey, there's a golden opportunity. You know, you don't have to ask that question and not have an answer. Here we are. Phone lines are open. You know.
Phone lines are wide open. That number again, if you don't have it, if you can't click on it, is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. I am really looking forward to see what happens with the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights all together. You know, Mr. Edwards, I was down at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights quite a few times when a lot of Somali complainants would be in there. Filing, you know, various papers or asking to speak to someone about possible discrimination. And I just think they were treated really poorly by the staff at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. And I hope the newly elected Somali city council person deals with this situation.
You know, that's an interesting observation, Mr. Allen, because I don't think that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department has had a full-time. They've had maybe an intern. They haven't had a Somali in there ever, if you will. And that's the reason that that people were shocked when Mr. Bong Yang, newly elected Fifth Ward Councilman, was, you know, shuffled out. And see, I maintain, and we talked about it on this program when it happened over a year ago, I mean, I maintain that his constitutional rights were violated when he was fired by Kip Brown.
Mm-hmm.
With the concurrence of Velma Corvell, the executive director, under pressure from the now county commissioner, and of course working through the office of the mayor and et cetera. I mean, you know, you know, Sherman had a part in that of that harassing Mr. Bong Yang. It was legendary around City Hall what they were doing to him, and then they ultimately just fired him from his position. You know what I mean? You know, but it's interesting your observation about Somalis, because they've never hired any East Africans up in there.
Yeah, we have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, get it.
You're live on the air, sir, and I know who this is. My question to you, real quick, before we start off here, is, why didn't the judge do something before, or in your favor, before the mayor's race? Go ahead, Doug Mann. Welcome to the show.
Doug Mann. Welcome, Mr. Mann. What's going on?
Oh, hey. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to second guess the judge. yeah, now it's... it's kind of odd. This stadium lawsuit didn't really seem to have too much of a splash, make much of a splash. The major media outlets, of course, decided not to cover my campaign after this hearing in August. So
now, has the judge handed down a ruling?
No, and I guess he might have as much as 90 days, and if he goes beyond that, probably the only way to compel him would be to go with a writ of mandamus to either the appellate court or the Supreme Court. To order.
Yeah, because the 90 days must be pretty close to being up. I mean, I thought that the 90 days was up in late October. In fact, the last time we had you on, which was about a month and a half ago, we assumed that he would be making his findings and determinations just before the election of last night. And then I didn't see anything or hear anything, and I was trying to figure out by what legal rationale Judge Philip Bush, decided that he was not going to render an opinion. Have you had any correspondence with the judge, you and your attorneys?
No, and I don't have any attorneys. I'm lining one.
Oh, that's
up
right.
The,
you're acting pro se. That's right. Okay.
Right. I was contacted by an attorney who's interested in helping out with appeals free of charge. So you know, I'll be much better equipped for that stage of it. But I think I did pretty well on the, you know, through the hearing stage. At least I think I got the legal issues laid out properly.
Okay. Well, since we last talked to you, of course, the lease agreement was signed. The Wilf Sports Empire received everything that they wanted.
Hmm.
Actually took the state and the taxpayers to the cleaners, really. And I would have thought that there would have been some concern to have had a ruling and a determination by the judge relevant to your lawsuit and the issues that came up. Because as we said to Councilman-elect Bong Yang about an hour ago, that I think that a lot of what we saw in some of these upsets of setting council members who stayed around was a direct outgrowth of the anger of voters and taxpayers in this town about what happened on the stadium. But no determination, no decision has been made. That's fascinating.
Right. And, you know, I mean, the state could have, you know, could have intervened and told them to get the, you know, and maybe ask the Supreme Court to, you know, hurry this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're, you know, if they're at all worried about the possibility of getting stuck with the $800 million contribution. Is it $800 million? Yeah, $800 million contribution mm-hmm. of the city. Because if the judge actually does rule in my favor and it's upheld at the Supreme Court, then, you know, the taxpayers of Minneapolis aren't going to be footing the bill, but the state of Minnesota is going to have to pay the freight. I mean, the legislature is going to have to come up with a statewide sales tax or something else.
Yeah, well, God forbid it's not another bingo game. let me just ask you this, Mr. Mann, and we have you. Do you have any opinion? Did you study closely the lease agreement that the State of Minnesota / Sports Facility Authority and the Wilf Sports Empire, led by Ziggy Wilf, signed a couple weeks ago? Did were you able to study it? Did you take a look at the many, I hate to use this word, Mr. Allen, the many concessions that were made to the Minnesota Vikings and the Wilf Sports Empire? Do you have any observations about those?
Well, without looking at it, if the state, you know, if the legislature exercised its discretionary authority to, you know, give away the farm, I guess that's they're entitled to do that.
Let me ask you a question, because we are certainly obligated here, because of and certainly I am, because of my personal knowledge and relationship with the Native American movement, the American Indian movement, etc. Mr. Clyde Belcourt and their attorneys approached the state of Minnesota today and raised a serious legal question about the state violating state rules and regulations and even the possibility of a conflict with the state constitution by floating the bonds after rejecting the appeal by AIM, the American Indian Movement, over the use of the name Redskins and asking for an appropriate action to delete references to that, and et cetera. And they found, Mr. Allen, a interesting piece of law that talks in terms of, actually, this piece of law came up many, 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 many years ago when neo-Nazism and / anti-Semitism was so prevalent here in Minnesota. And they came up with, you know, there are certain provisions under the law where, you know, taxpayers' monies cannot be used to further and aid and abet discriminatory actions and et cetera. And there was a press conference this afternoon, and Mr. Belcourt and the American Indian Movement, joined by a number of strong supporters, have indicated they are challenging the state of Minnesota, Mr. Mann, to issue those, you know, $700 million worth of bonds.
To issue $700 million worth of bonds for what?
For the stadium, Doug.
Oh,
the Native American movement is challenging the right of the state of Minnesota under its constitution and under legislation to issue those bonds in light of the refusal of the Sports Facility Authority to address the issue of racial epithets, discrimination, and racial bias.
Oh, yeah. So what, they're filing a writ of prohibition then?
Probably in the process. I would assume that it'll probably be in the Johannesburg Times tomorrow morning, probably one or two lines. But what happened, a number of major stations at the 6 o'clock news carried, because Mr. Belcourt and them, Mr. Allen, went back down and confronted the Sports Facility Authority at its offices there in the Metrodome. And they have filed an official, it is some kind of brief, maybe an amicus brief, with the state of Minnesota and with the, there is a regulatory board that the state has that has to, you know, sign off and facilitate when the state is putting its bonds on the market.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and yeah. There is specific language that talks in terms of a situation in which an entity, in this case the Sports Facility Authority, is aiding and abetting in discriminatory action. Could be very interesting, and particularly in light of the fact that there will be heavy security tomorrow night, gentlemen, here in the Twin Cities. There is anticipation that there could be a problem at the Washington Vikings game, because Native Americans are coming from across the country to protest, and it could get interesting down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was figuring if I was up for it, I'll probably go down there. I'm just recovering from being sick over the last few days.
Oh, okay.
But, I was listening to some of the remarks you made earlier on about the hiring for this stadium, for the construction project, and
mm-hmm.
how what you expect.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 40 African Americans will be considered.
The total of persons of color will be 68, about 68. In that, maybe half of that, you know, 34, maybe African Americans at best. But there will not be this 32% people of color that was being so touted a year ago at this time. No, what the people who do this for a living, you know, big time. In fact, the I'm being told now, Mr. Allen, that the Minneapolis Building Trades has indicated there doesn't need to be any more discussions with Mr. King and his associates about any number beyond, you know, 70.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's what's in play. All right,
yeah,
Mr. Mann, do us a favor. If you do get a ruling from Judge Bush, we would certainly... On the occasion of the next show, our Wednesday program, to immediately give Mr. Allen a text. We'd like to have you on and get your observations and your feelings on how Judge Bush will rule on this and what that means.
Oh, okay, and try to give me a call here fairly soon yourself. I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care, Mr. Mann.
Yep, thank you for calling.
Doug Mann, the only Minnesotan who stood up and went into court to challenge the unconstitutional, or in this case, the violation of the Minneapolis City Charter, which is, of course, the city's constitution, if you will. And, boy, I'm telling you, the people were holding their breath. My calendar says to me, Mr. Allen, that Judge Bush was to have given a ruling around the 27th, 26th of October. That the 90 days that he had under the statute was up. But I don't know. Maybe he gave himself an extension. You can do that, can't you? You can just do whatever you want to do, right?
Well, if you're a judge, yeah, you can do whatever hell you want to do, especially if there's an election coming up and you don't want to create any friction.
Okay.
You know, I'm alleging that there was some friction created, and, you know, because I think Mr. Edwards, I don't think the mayoral race would have turned out that much differently, you know, but I do think that Mr. Mann would have rose quite a bit in the polls the next time he ran, maybe for school board or Congress or whatever, that, you know, he probably would have done really well.
So, but it would have been nice.
You know, I fully agree. I fully agree with that, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really put the kibosh on his campaign, on Doug Mann's campaign, because he was raising real tough questions about what happened when the city council on a 7-6 vote violated the Minneapolis city charter, the very Magna Carta, if you will, that governs their own existence and et cetera. And it was just amazing how they closed down on him, you know.
Yep.
And yet we got articles in the paper this morning telling us what a bad man, an African-American who was assassinated in a nightclub here in downtown Minneapolis, what a bad guy he is. They got all kinds of information, you know, that he was. By the way, many of our folks don't know that you can, that the county attorney can have you called what is called universal trespassing. See, that's how they can make you leave town. They can, you know, I remember way back in the day before the Supreme Court ruled on it, where, you know, white police would give you what they call a floater out of town. Well, in this town, to our listening audience, the county attorney was in the paper this morning talking about Mr. Washington wouldn't have been dead if he would have followed the order that was served on him, indicating that he was persona non grata from coming into downtown Minneapolis and even being in the city of Minneapolis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's nuts. That is nuts right there.
Yeah, based on alleged terroristic threats that he made to some police officers while standing in the line waiting to go in Pizza Lucci's, one of the most notorious bad spots in downtown Minneapolis, which never has its license under review. But, yeah, that came out today.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Edwards, about this shooting. Now, they didn't find any suspects, correct?
There's no suspect as we speak at this hour, right.
Okay, so I was reading what the Star and Tribune put up about this guy being such a bad guy and him talking to crazy police. Now, this was actually an assassination.
It was assassinated. It was coordinated.
Like. And
in
you know,
fact, let me just say this. It was pre-rehearsed.
Yes, it was.
In the hours before Mr. Washington arrived, unbeknownst to him. There were 2 metal detectors and 46 security personnel, highly trained. That's on the inside. Outside, there was over 50. There were over 50 or more Minneapolis police officers armed to the teeth with mace and pepper spray, and there were both dogs and horses. The horse brigade had been put out, and so you maybe had close to 100 police officers outside. You had 46 security personnel in play inside. The gunman walked up, shot Mr. Washington point blank, once in the head, twice in the chest. Did not hit anybody else. In other words, there wasn't any of that wild spraying and et cetera, and then calmly disappeared. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with police at the back door and all these kinds of things. Now, no one can indicate how a gun got into that kind of secure facility. I mean, how did it get by the metal detectors? I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, the gun was already inside the establishment. In fact, it was right out of the movie Godfather. For those that are fans of Godfather, went into the bathroom. and reached up in the old the flusher thing, and there it was. But, yeah, to your question, what the issue really is, they don't care about Mr. Washington having expired. As we've said again, the downtown council has indicated it wants Negroes out of downtown, okay? There was a lot of anticipation. There was a lot of nervousness in the time that over 2,500 people fled out of Envy. And the white clubs downtown, by the way, locked their doors. And this is kind of interesting because some black partygoers said, well, okay, just we're out for an evening entertainment. They were denied entrance into a number of white clubs in downtown Minneapolis. Folks locked the door. So what happened was we then as a community were painted with a very broad brush, and, of course, it didn't help when outgoing Councilman Don Samuels got to talking in terms of bad people and the rapper Yo Gotti was a bad person and et cetera and et cetera and et cetera. And I'm saying, well, there's a lot of bad people and a lot of bad institutions. You know, just 5 months ago in this city, black folk, after the murder of T.T. Franklin by police, thought that, you know, all the whole department, police department were bad people, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then after white officers were captured on tape in Apple Valley and Green Bay, Wisconsin, talking about black people, including their own black colleagues and comrades at arms, and I have to use the term, calling them niggers and things like that, and calling their own chief a lesbian whore and such things as that. Didn't we all kind of this past summer kind of get an uneasy feeling that maybe, you know, we were at risk?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, we were asked by the so-called responsible institutions to do what? You know, don't hold the police department responsible for the actions of a few, right?
Exactly.
Well, that doctrine exactly. disappeared this past weekend when the chief said that you people should not be allowed to come downtown. Yeah.
Not good at all.
No. So what else we got left on? We're coming up on the last 6 minutes. That phone line is open for one last call. If anybody wants to call in, you know, I imagine people are watching football, basketball, baseball, hockey or something, you know. So, but I repeat Mr. Allen, we're at the bottom of the barrel, buddy.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who's going to be able to hit the reset button, but it needs to be hit immediately. So that's just the way it goes.
Yes, it should. By the way, maybe we can get a report from our leaders on their meeting this afternoon with Mayor R.T. Ryback as he laid out his plan for and his expectations from them as he puts into play his quote-unquote plan for the miseducation of the African-American child. And that wasn't a misspeech or a misrepresentation or misstatement. The under-education, non-education, if you will, no education for the African-American child. And by the way, for you black parents out there that them folks been giving you that medication and et cetera for your baby, you know, at some point you better find somebody to diagnose it for you. Your child gets awful lethargic, you know, with them kind of drugs in their system.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, yes, they did. By the way, we had said last week that we would to discuss Mayor R.T. Ryback's manifesto of 2009, but anyway, we got no questions. I just tucked it back into the confidential file. So if anybody wants to ask this about R.T. Ryback's plan first advanced in 2009, we sure got it here.
Maybe
that's what was discussed this afternoon.
Well, maybe we could try to send an email over to R.T. and see if he'll come on the air with us next week. It's worth a shot.
Who, R.T.?
R.T. Ryback.
Man, let's do that, man. And then maybe you can tell us, you know, what the future holds for the Civil Rights Department. But my betting is that what I hear the betting is in Vegas is that Michael Brown, is going to become the new director of the Civil Rights Department. That'll be one of the first appointments that that Mayor Betsy Hodges makes.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, we got a little bit under 2 minutes here now, and we'd like to thank everybody for listening. Any closing words here, Mr. Edwards, before we shoot to James Brown?
You know, history was made on both sides of the aisle last night here in our beloved Shangri-La. We had Asian, we had Hispanic, Latino, we had Somalis elected for the first time to governmental bodies, if you will. But on the other hand, we had a significant void in both Minneapolis and St. Paul for the first time in 33 years in one locale, 27 years in the other. The African American, as happened in 1901, when the last African American was expelled from the Congress of the United States, African Americans no longer serve on the city councils of these two great cities. We've been purged, my brother.
Yep. Oh, yes, we have. Well, we'll be back next week. Everyone, thanks for listening.